Stew.
Stew.
Deer.
Deer.
Oh.
Deer. Deer.
That's it.
This is Kurt Anderson welcoming you to a, you know, spooky edition of Studio 360. All this week, in honor of Halloween, the team and I are bringing you some of our favorite stories from way down in our archival crypt. I wanted to start things off with one of my favorite recent guests, Alice Cooper. He has died more often, more dramatically, and in front of more millions of people than any performer ever. He has these highly theatrical rock shows full of fake blood and feathers and God knows what. And at the end of each one, he gets electrocuted or beheaded or otherwise destroyed. In real life, he has managed to survive very nicely. He is 68 and still very much rocking.
I love the dead before they're cool. The bluing flesh for me to hold. Cadaver eyes upon me see nothing.
Alice came into the studio last year. And what do your friends call you? Not Alice.
You know, I'll tell you, everybody calls me Coop.
Yeah?
And that came from Groucho Marx. I got to know Groucho very well in Los Angeles in his later years. And he used to come to the show, and he would go, Alice is the last hope for vaudeville. Which I thought was the best compliment I ever got
Absolutely.
In my life. You know, but he would bring, like, Fred Astaire.
Really?
Mae West, George Burns, Jack Benny to the show. All vaudevillians, you know. And they would watch the show. And everybody in the audience would be freaking out about everything. And they'd be watching the show going, yeah, Gracie and I in Toledo, 1927, saw the guy do the guillotine like that, you know.
We
were sitting there going, like, you know, these guys were like the best of the best.
Yeah. And it's interesting because vaudeville is what you were doing.
It is. It's,
yeah,
it's psychedelic vaudeville,
yeah.
Hard rock vaudeville.
Your first single was released when you were 17, and it's called Why Don't You Love Me?
Right.
I want to play a bit of that. Record.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. So how did that record come to be?
Well, you know, we were the exact right age to be affected by the British invasion.
Right.
We were 15, 16. I'm painting the house, you know, in the summertime, and I always had the radio on. And all of a sudden I hear, da-dum, da-dum, she loves you, yeah, yeah. And I went, what was that? Yeah, I never heard anything like that. It was like the spark that you know, every guy I knew in school wanted to be now in a band.
Right. And so you record this single. Did you think, okay, I'm on my way, this is it?
Well, we were just a little, you know, just an awful little band that played parties, and we learned maybe 8 songs.
Yeah.
The four guys, 3 guys on the team, in the band, were all on the cross-country track team. We were all jocks.
Huh.
4-year Letterman, all of us.
Huh.
So, you know, this horrific Alice Cooper band was actually jocks.
Yeah.
And pretty wholesome. And then the other 2 guys we got in the band were pure juvenile delinquents. I mean, these guys were kicked out of school every day.
So that helped. So you could keep it real.
So we had some, had some street cred. You know?
the earliest song of yours that people probably know is I'm 18 and This Is That. Now, 1971 was different than 1965, but there's a big change in you, in the way you sound in those 6 years. I mean, there's this, like, rawness and intensity in the voice.
Well, there was Bob Ezrin, our producer, came in and saw us play and realized that we were a band that had a lot of elements, but we didn't have, like, a focus. And he kept saying, dumb it down. Keep making it dumber, because it's, I'm 18, and I don't get what I want. You know, one of the first punk songs, really. But an anthem.
Totally.
Every 18-year-old kid totally got that. I'm a boy and I'm a man. I'm 18. And the hook was, and I like it.
Which had all kinds of dirty implication.
Yeah. So there it was. It was, and you had to fit this little single that didn't make any sense into where the Supremes, Simon and Garfunkel, the Beatles, it had to fit in this top 40. And it did somehow.
Yeah. And it was a little Jim Morrison-y.
Yeah, yeah. It had some, it wasn't as sophisticated as the Doors, but it was definitely Detroit rock.
So do you, like a song like I'm 18, do you still play that?
That song is essential in the show.
Yeah.
That's the one song when we start the show, I do it with a crutch. You know, I'm 18. I say I'm singing 18, not 80. Okay.
Yeah. So you were doing it. I mean, Alice Cooper in the 70s was this sort of less serious vaudevillian thing, and so at 60 you can do it in the same.
I play Alice now even more of a villain. He was a villain then. He's even a better villain now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, rock and roll was full of rock and roll heroes. There was a million Peter Pans and no Captain Hook.
Good point.
And I said, well, I'll gladly be Captain Hook because that's more fun than being Peter Pan.
Yeah.
And
you
really,
can do it for longer.
Yeah. And not only that, but I mean, I had the face for it. I had the, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a villainous looking guy.
So you mentioned punk. I mean, that was, unlike punk, unlike the serious we're going to change the world stuff in rock and roll in the late 60s, you were never conveying an idea that you were serious about we're going to change the world.
And we were never politically motivated at all.
Yeah.
We were much more, well, at the time, you have to remember now, here's Alice Cooper, 1969, 1970. I've got eye makeup on. I'm wearing, you know, a pair of black leather pants, my girlfriend's slip that's ripped to pieces with blood all over it, which begs the audience to go, what happened? What just happened there? You know, because it scared a lot of people.
Did it actually? I guess it did.
Oh yeah,
because there was nothing like a parody of parents.
But there was nothing to compare it to.
Right, right.
And so we were suddenly satanic.
Yeah.
We were suddenly the worst thing that could ever happen. And people were inventing things about Alice Cooper. I would come into a town and there'd be 9 new rumors. And the ASPCA was there, and the FBI was there, and everything. And I'm going, wow, this is really good.
Which is interesting, given that you, again, unlike other bands that had actual political ambitions, that was, you were a vaudevillian.
Not at all. We were, you know, there were some bands that were into politics and changed the world. We were into blondes and Corvettes.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
all the right reasons to be in rock and roll.
all the real reasons, mostly. At that time, you were living, again, not what Alice Cooper should be doing, living in a mansion in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Well, now we had some money. You have to remember, we had a number one album now, you know, and by this time we're headlining. And so we've got enough money to actually get out of the hotels and into a house. And so the band moved into a house in Greenwich, Connecticut, where we way didn't belong. I mean, Greenwich was blue blood, bleeding everywhere. And here we were, our hair was literally down to our waist. And we would go into town and people would hide.
It's barely to his shoulders now.
Yeah, it's very conservative now. And yet we were not the most disturbing thing on the block.
What was that?
Betty Davis lived next door.
At a fairly advanced age.
Yes. And she would drive her XKE about 100 miles an hour down these roads.
Awesome.
And she was a party in herself. She would come over and ask us to turn the music up.
Really?
And this was loud rock and roll. She was something.
I want that reality show.
Yeah, that would have been great, you know. And I told her, I said, you did play a part in Alice Cooper. And she goes, what? And I said, look, when I was designing the character, there were two things that I really liked. I saw Barbarella and the Black Queen. Then I saw Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
That's
the
a scary
old
character.
Woman with the caked on makeup trying to look young, with the makeup cracking and the eyes not quite right. I said, that's the makeup for Alice.
And how did she take that?
She thought it was great. You know, I said, that was one of the scariest characters ever was Baby Jane.
For sure. Your father was a Christian fundamentalist lay minister.
Yes.
I read. Did being in that fundamentalist biblical environment to some degree, did that affect how you designed this evil character?
Well, it was funny because I grew up, I was the prodigal son. I grew up in the church. I was in church on Friday night, all day Sunday, Wednesday night. All my friends were church kids. And then when the band happened, it pulled me away to L.A. and I became the poster boy for everything wrong, you know, that could possibly be wrong, and then came back to the church. about 25 years ago. Came
really?
Back to the church, yeah.
That I same mean, church?
No, different oh. church, but Christian church.
Uh-huh.
And pretty much when I quit drinking, changed my lifestyle, and that my wife and I, my wife's also a preacher's kid.
Huh.
Her dad's a Baptist pastor.
Huh.
And, you know, now we're all Christians and everything's cool.
And, okay, there is still the imagery in the show. That,
yeah.
Does that still freak out people?
I think it might, you know, I mean, I think if people don't have fun with my show now on a level of, yeah, it's scary, and at the same time, you should have your tongue solidly in your cheek on this.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, there's nothing satanic in it. There's nothing, there's never any nudity. There's never bad language in
yeah.
my show. I would never allow any bad language in my show. Alice, the Alice villain is a gentleman.
Uh-huh.
In other, he might slit your throat, but he would never swear at you.
Yeah.
You know, and I throw a little Clouseau in there too.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't mind him slipping on a banana peel once
yeah,
in a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. one of the iconic stories about you that a lot of people know is that this live chicken got ripped apart
yes.
on stage. What happened there? What
okay.
is the definitive story?
It's a great story. We're at the Toronto Peace and Love Festival.
Nice.
Okay. 1969. And we're playing between The Doors and John Lennon and Yoko Ono. At the end of our show, we open up feather pillows and CO2 cartridges, and it looks like a blizzard on stage with lights going, strobe lights. It looks spectacular. Lennon's over here and John and Morrison's over here, and they're going, this is great, you know, because huh. it's a freak out, you know. The next thing I look on the stage and there's a chicken. There's a white chicken on stage. Now, I know I didn't bring it. We didn't bring it, but there it was. And I'm figuring, well, somebody in the audience, see, I got my keys, I got my wallet, got my chicken. Time to go to Alice's show. They throw it on stage.
It's Canada.
Well, I've never been on a farm in my life, so it had feathers, it had wings, it should fly. So I picked it up and I chucked it in the audience, figuring it would fly a little bit. Somebody would get it, take it home, and have a nice pet. The audience tore it to pieces. Now, the thing that was the kicker to the story was that the first six rows were all in wheelchairs. They're the ones that tore the...
Is that true?
Yes. And threw the parts back on stage. Next day in the paper, Alice Cooper kills chicken
right.
and bites the head off. And
right.
Frank Zappa calls me up and he says, did you kill a chicken last night on stage? And I went, no. And he said, well, don't tell anybody. They love it.
Yeah.
He says, they're loving it. It's great.
It was like your comedy Altamont.
And I just went, okay. So from then on, I didn't deny anything.
Yeah.
Everything people made, and there was no internet then, so everything was word of mouth.
Yeah.
By the time anybody heard it, it was 9 chickens. It was 12
right.
chickens.
It and you
was,
did it every night.
I did it every night, you know.
You have this new album coming out next month with a group you've put together called The Hollywood Vampires. Tell this story. Who, what, why?
Well, The Hollywood Vampires, about 1973, we lived in L.A. And every night I found myself at the Rainbow on Sunset Strip. And Bernie Taupin and Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees and Harry Nilsson. And John Lennon, when he was there, Harry and Don were John were best of friends. Keith Moon from The Who. Every night we sat there, and it was last man standing. And they finally started calling us the Hollywood Vampires because we never saw daylight.
Really, we just sat there drinking all night?
Yeah, we just drank all night. I finally I was doing a movie with Johnny Depp in England, Dark Shadows. And we went to play a club called The 100 Club that was about the size of these two rooms here.
Which is to say small.
And all we did was, I said, we're going to be a bar band tonight. And said, I knew Johnny was a good guitar player. And I said, Johnny, come and play with us. And he said, okay. So we started playing. And we realized that every song we played was some British invasion song that this audience loved. And I said, you know, we should really put a band together and just do nothing but
covers.
And then we started thinking, you know, all of our dead drunk friends, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix,
Keith Moon,
all the guys that we drank with are now dead. Let's do an album in tribute to them. Let's do the Hollywood Vampires. And so we did it at Johnny Depp's house. He has a big studio in his house. Joe Perry, myself, and then people started dropping in. You know, Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the list of people. Paul McCartney was the one that, like, which one doesn't belong?
Yeah, no, he's a rocker, man.
There is one of the songs on the album is a T-Rex song. And here is your Hollywood Vampires cover version of Jeepster.
You're so sweet. You're so fine. I want you all and everything.
So that's a pretty straight ahead cover. I mean, it's harder rock, yeah, but it's a pretty straightforward rendition.
It was really kind of hard to imitate the sound of the 70s because there was a certain sound that those amps got, that those guitars got. And I said, we can't not be ourselves. We have to toughen this up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so every song that we attacked, you know, the way we would do it. But we stayed pretty close.
And you're going to play. You've got a big show in Rio de Janeiro.
Rock and Rio. Yeah, it's going to be fun. You know, and it's so weird for all of us because none of us have ever been in a band where it's just all celebrities.
Super, you know, group.
And I've never done that. You know, so I'm really just the singer in this band.
And so the Hollywood Vampires, you'll do that for a while. How long do you foresee continuing to do Alice Cooper?
Oh, I have no intention of retiring at all.
Yeah.
I've never been in better health. You know, there's no reason for me to ever retire. I tell everybody I'm booked into next century.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, rock on, dude. Alice Cooper, this has been a pleasure.
Oh, that's fun.
By the way, seeing Alice Cooper walk through a public radio station was just as wonderful as you might be imagining. We'll have more Halloween-ish stories and conversations in this feed for the whole week. Tomorrow, what it takes to make a haunted house sound haunted.
And sometimes I'll arrange these big 2, 3, 4 in the music. When the boom happens, that's everyone's cue to do something, you know, really wild.
See ya. Oh.